Hey everyone, it's episode 491 of This Is Whole Life, where we dig deeper into each message each week, and hopefully, I'm thinking, we learn to love God in a more meaningful and deep way together. This year, of course, we are in the year of overflow, but only for another 8 weeks. And then, sorry,
are you serious?
Guys, that was fast.
Yeah, 291, and we're
there's
right after.
There's only 8 more weeks of this year?
Isn't it right? It's right about,
yeah.
Doesn't
it? You might
weeks?
Be right. That's
yeah,
like,
that's right.
I think,
wow, okay.
Maybe my math, I mean, yeah, don't take my math, I mean, please.
Wow.
Because
okay.
We put a set, but.
9 weeks.
9 weeks. Okay. I missed one. Okay. Yeah. Because it's 491. So we got 9 weeks
wow.
left, but that's still crazy. So this conversation would really, really like your input. That's what it would really like. And you can do that on our online chat every week during the message. You can do it after the service by emailing podcast@wholelife.church, voicemail or text 407-965-1607. And as always, to my left, it is Melanie Bachman, our worship pastor. Across the table and to my right is Ken Wetmore, lead pastor. Lucas is next door to me, my teammate and partner, and Randy. That's me. So welcome. We're going to be diving into the first of four messages today. And this is a series called Double Portion. And this is the message from November 1st. So if you go into our sister podcast and episode 284, it has the same title. And that is the message we're talking about. And it was Double Portion, The Apprentice, where Ken was back after 3 long weeks.
Four.
Who was in the first one?
We had a youth Sabbath.
Oh, that's right. It was youth Sabbath. I'm like, wait a minute. It can't be connected. Yeah. That was too far ago. Wow. Time travels fast. I mean, 4 weeks. Whew. Maybe it didn't seem that fast for you, though. You're like, man, I'm already back. I'm already back.
I don't know. I felt a little bit more zippy this Sabbath, though. I was like, wow.
You,
it's like,
you looked a little zippy.
Like you. It's like, you know, after pitching, you know, 8 innings and you get a game or two off and you get to come back. You're like, oh, I think I have my fastball maybe.
Yeah. Well,
or not.
It was, who was our worship host this week?
Atara?
Online.
Atara. Yeah.
Oh, online?
And Maddie?
Atara and Maddie.
For service.
We also have worship center hosts. So it took me a second.
That's true.
To
I didn't make that distinction clear. I just had to laugh at during Q&A in first service when she was like, man, I know I've been away for a while, but Ken, like, I got to ask you about this new getup you're wearing. And Ken's like, look, I've worn this like a bunch of times. Like, you have been gone for a while. So, Atara, it was good to have you back.
It was.
So glad.
Did a great job, too.
Yeah. It's always fun. Her and Maddie were killing it, especially after second service. I didn't think they were going to let the online family leave.
Why? Why would you want to let them leave?
I don't know. They were
just
doing their
best
to keep up.
Hang out in the lobby.
hang out in the lobby with us until
like
the next
my parents
week.
When I was a kid. They would never go home after church. Just hanging out in the lobby.
And now it's all I want to do is hang out in the lobby and talk to people.
Because you're a parent. Now your kids are like, come on, Doug.
What are you doing, bro? You talk, don't you see these people all week? No. Well, some. But anyway. All right. We had a couple of texts to the show. And the first text is directed towards the good Melanie Bachman. And it starts out with, in defense of recent mentions on the podcast.
Are there
podcast,
some to the bad Melanie Bachman? Just out of curiosity. I'm just wondering.
Well,
I'll let
you be the judge.
All right.
In defense of recent mentions on the podcast, I would like to say that I never gratuitously propagate adoration of Melanie and her preaching. Do we know who this is from? Melanie, any guesses?
I don't know, but I'm liking the vocabulary so far.
That's right. I'm very proud and endorsive that she has chosen such honorable, godly causes to espouse. Any closer?
Okay.
Can I help it that she just explains them with more conviction and knowledge than anyone else I know?
Okay.
Okay, we've got one more. So yes, admittedly, being in hearty agreement with the values held by my whole life family, I unashamedly promote her preaching along with the entire rest of what my home church is teaching. You are all my family. Signed, Melanie?
That's got to be my dad.
Yeah, that's it. That is Rod. And I had in quotes just in case Melanie's daddy.
Thanks,
so,
Dad.
Yeah, I was like, aw, come on.
Nice.
That's it. And then we had a question, and this is, again, this is from the Dirt message that was not this
So I guess he wasn't mad at you for throwing him under the bus.
I guess not.
Yeah, it went pretty well.
What was left of him wrote me this nice note, so thank you.
Well, you left enough to, you know, you left the good parts anyway. So there you go. We had a question from Tammy that said, it asked, if humanity is unconcerned about destroying the first home we've been given, why should or would God trust us with a new one?
That is a great question.
And I'm like, well, because he promised, so maybe that's why.
Well, maybe that's why we're still here, because we haven't gotten this one right yet. So we haven't earned the next one. I don't know.
Dirt is Selvonic.
Selvific.
So what?
Selvific.
Selvific. What did I say?
Selvonic.
Selvonic? That was wrong.
But
don't worry, you're so a savant to me.
It still sounds cool.
Lucas, Sim?
Who?
From Thursday?
Oh, so, my.
What in the world?
We met someone at a coffee shop with a name we'd never heard before, and no one could pronounce it. And we, what was it?
Something like with S.
It was an S in front of a name you wouldn't normally.
Smike.
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 They're like, because they kept asking, got a coffee for Mike? And he's like, and they're like, what? Like, and he's like, coffee for Mike? And he's like,
Smike.
And she's looking at him like, I don't know why you're hissing or sing me. And he's like, Smike. And we were like, oh, Smike. And I've never heard that name before. If you have a friend or if you know anyone, because I'm like, where are the origins of Smike?
You know what?
What do you want to name your baby? Sam Smike. Mike Smike. Smike.
Everyone in the coffee shop was trying to hold it together.
I do have to confess that I don't love going to coffee shops and then... I don't love going to coffee shops and having them yell my name across the whole store.
So do you have a pseudonym?
Sometimes I give them... different names.
Smike?
No. I think
Smelanie?
The last one I
used. Smelanie? That's the one I double dare you. Smelanie next time.
Dr. Buckman.
Smelanie. Yeah, no, Smelanie is the...
Wait, what did they say? Coffee for Melanie? That's all you respond with.
I think we ought to take all of our staff and just add an S to the beginning of their names from here on. Slukas.
Sken.
Srandy.
Freud.
Freud.
Sobri. Sanderline.
Sable.
Oh, man.
Scarin.
Steve.
Steve. Salix.
Scarla.
Yeah.
I'm telling you right now.
Oh, this is good. This is good. I don't know why that popped into my brain.
Solig.
I'm just saying we were there and I'm listening and it's really noisy. There's kids. It's a small little place. We were in Winter Garden on Albert's recommendation so we could film announcements that there. They have a really pretty outdoor area and we wanted to sit outside. So I kept wondering why this person like, just couldn't figure it out. And then it was just like, Smike. Okay, well.
I feel like there's a good chance that person wrote that name, not because it was their name.
Could have been.
But because they just wanted the barista to have to say it, and that's why they made... I mean...
I don't know.
I don't know about you, but when somebody mispronounces my name, I'm just like, thanks, and take it. So.
Yeah.
But it looks... Who mispronounces Ken?
Oh, you'd be surprised.
Three letters.
I'm Kent often.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's one.
Oh, but
one.
Now you're Skin.
Skin.
Oh.
Skin.
Not to be. Yeah, there you go.
Man, you really give him a tongue twister by putting an S on the beginning of it, because that's...
I think if I had an S, I'm going to go with Skenneth.
Skenny.
I like that better, Skenneth.
Ooh, Skenny.
Skenny.
I'm looking a little used skinny to be, these
not
days
anymore. Had to change my name. Now it's Skenneth.
Oh, my word. All right, guys. If you're listening, please, please call the voicemail number 407-965-1607 and pronounce your name with an S on it. Send them to me, and I promise we will play them during the beginning of next week's episode just so that we can all laugh together, because We left pretty hard that day, and it just didn't leave the whole day. We just sat there regurgitating this, and now I'm laughing all over again. All right. That's two text messages down. We have an email to go, and the email is from Jack, who said, dirt is partially soil. Particles of dirt rain down in H2O and erupts into minerals. Dirt is where we find rare earth, iron ore, minerals, where most vegetation grows from its nutrition, and we will one day become dirt. Nonetheless, waste is something we can adjust and aspire to change by recycling, by utilizing frugally, by renewal, by research and development, by human ingenuity over everything, as given to our domain and care, what is in the air and water, and what is on land. Genesis 1, 27, 29 through 30, and he also listed Genesis 2, 14 through 20, and so on. God bless.
Nice.
Says Jack. Thanks, Jack.
Great exposition. I like it.
You know, Jack, seems like every week here for the last couple, you've had like spot on insight into everything. So maybe you and Melanie are just
on the same wavelength.
Yeah,
I like
it.
Yep.
And I bet if I asked Jack.
Thank you, Jack.
I think Jack. Yeah, thank you, S Jack. That's hard to say. That's you came with an S and a J.
Say Jack. That's kind of like past Say Jack, right?
Okay. Yeah, I could probably put that in there. Let us know if that works for you, Jack. I bet if I asked him, he'd say, "Where is Melanie's podcast that we've heard so much about?" And to that, I say, "Yeah, Melanie. When are we going to hear your podcast?"
We have a name for the podcast now.
Smelanie?
Smelanie Podcast.
Smelanie's Podcast.
Oh, man. Oh, that's original. You're not going to find that.
I'm definitely original.
Nobody is going to mess up that name while searching for it, is all I'm going
to say. @gmail.com.
Well, I feel like this week, maybe the characters should have been named Stony and Savini and Guido. Because it really felt like this week's Bible story was a storyline straight out of an HBO Wise Guys movie. You got dead bodies, you got cadavers, you got a run to the cave with the family tomb, you got bad guys following you from Moab, and you're not going to make it. So you're like, "Hey, man, let's ditch the goods here." And we literally launch our beloved corpse into a cave on our way by as we are evading the bad guys. And that loved one accidentally crashes into a box containing Elisha's bones. And if that's not weird enough and you're just like literally running for your life, then that corpse after touching the box full of skeletal remains comes back to life. That's a show I'd binge. I don't know how many episodes. I think we've got 6 or 8 episodes in there somewhere.
Yeah.
I'd binge that.
Yeah, for sure.
That is a great story.
Maybe we can talk to Stanley about creating Elisha.
Stanley?
Stanley. We can ask him about doing a series. Bible series. That would be actually kind of fun.
That would be kind of fun. That's wild.
There's not been enough movies about Elisha.
Yeah.
Name one.
Selisha? Okay. All right. That's enough for this.
Let's be a little careful here.
That's enough for that episode. Yeah, because
eventually we're going to run into a name that is problematic.
Not sure what it is, but
no doubt.
But it has to happen. So, do we know what starts this story?
So this story actually comes from the last story about Elijah. He's his ministry is wrapped up. There's a story that I'll be preaching on the last Sabbath that I'm preaching on him. And then this is kind of the addendum at the end. It's kind of like the postscript. And it's
this is after the chariots?
Oh, yeah. This is long after the chariots. This is the end of Elisha's life.
End of Elisha's life.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
So we get to the end of Elisha's life, and he dies, and then the writer says sometime after that. So there's no – doesn't tell us when exactly, but sometime after that, Moabite raiders were coming into Israel. Raiding parties were coming in, and about that time, a burial party was trying to bury someone, and the Moabite raiding party came out of nowhere, and so they threw the body of this dead man into Elisha's tomb, and the Bible says that when his body touched the bones, he came back to life, and that's how the story ends of Elisha's ministry.
I feel like it's a story that's very underrepresented, though, because that whole entire story is one verse. That's it.
Yeah.
It's like
almost— All of it happens in one verse?
All of it happens in one verse.
Wow. Is it one or two?
It's just one.
Is it one?
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, it's jam-packed full of good stuff.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I thought it'd be fun to start the story at the end, and you just think about this. Like I said, for what other— I mean, the number of people who actually bring somebody back from the dead in the Bible is pretty limited.
Jesus, Elisha.
Did Elijah bring somebody back? I can't remember whether he did or not.
It seems like he did.
Lucas, you want to look that up on AI and see if that, did Elijah bring someone back?
Let's take a look.
Let's take a look. Because I feel like I'm with Melanie. I feel like he did, but
it sounds familiar.
I also could not say with any degree of certainty or details of that incident. Because the person that we hear about.
Yeah, he did. The widow of Zarephath's
son.
That's
it.
There it is.
That's it.
And Elisha does the same for the son of the Shunammite woman. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Her name is Mary, by the way.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you.
In the Bible readings that.
Gotcha.
I can't, you know, the
Your
my Bible,
Bible
friends
books.
Always calls her the woman of Shunem or Shushim or whatever it is. And I'm like, nah, you know, I can't read that 46 times in 12 pages. I need a name. So Mary was who
But
she
I think
is.
I think Elisha, Elijah, and Jesus are the only people in the Bible that are recorded as bringing somebody back to life.
No.
Peter and Paul?
Peter. There we go. Yeah. That's true.
But out of all of those, though, like Elisha would be the one I would have guessed if you said who. Four, you know, three or four out of the five people that I'm going to give you brought somebody back. Elisha wouldn't have been one on my list. Well, you don't hear that much about Elisha. I feel like the Bible, you hear Elijah.
Which is fascinating because like twice as much was written about Elisha's ministry as about Elijah's ministry.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Because I was going to—
There's far more details about— Now, Elijah, I think, is mentioned in more places— other places in the Bible than Elisha. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Elijah gets mentioned a lot throughout the rest of the Bible, but when it actually comes to his story, there's quite a bit on Elisha.
Because I was super surprised when you said that the Bible records that Elisha performed more than twice as many miracles mm-hmm. as Elijah.
Yep.
I would, again, have not said, like, true or false. I'd have been like, how did this game show would have been
I'll talk about it next week in next week's sermon. But and people debate what's a miracle, what counts, what doesn't count. So this is a rough count, okay. But it's basically Elijah has 7 miracles that are listed roughly, and Elisha has 16.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's wild. He's the, you know, that it's Elijah and then it's Elisha, but it always seems like Elijah was the person that gets talked about more. Like, I can't tell you anything that Elisha did other than when after he goes to heaven, he performs the same miracle with his cloak over the waters, parts the water for them to walk
after
across.
After Elijah goes to heaven.
After Elijah
Elisha
goes to heaven.
Does the—
Yeah, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But that would have been like the only thing just off the top of my head that I could have said, oh, yeah, I know that about Elisha and his story. And I'm sure there's more, but it doesn't seem like there's so much more. But if all that story was in one verse, I mean, how many verses does he have total?
Quite a few.
Really? That's wild.
You know, there's something else that I just, because I was reviewing the story this week, that I had not noticed before. And that is when God sends him to go anoint Elisha. He sends Elijah to go anoint Elisha. He tells him first, you know, to anoint Hazael, mm-hmm. king of Aram, and then Jehu, king of Israel, and then to anoint Elisha as your replacement.
Yep.
And then he says—
Yeah, this is a grim text. This is why it wasn't in the sermon.
But it adds another layer to who Elisha is, though, because it says basically the people that— Hazael doesn't kill, Jehu will kill, and the ones that Jehu doesn't kill, Elisha will kill.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Elisha was...
So apparently Elisha also knew how to wield a sword or something.
So once I anoint you, your next job is to take up thine sword and...
Apparently, yeah.
And that's in the... Wow. And that comes right after this? In the story or no?
It comes right before he puts his mantle on Elisha.
On the mantle. Yeah. Oh, okay. Wow. So where does that story connect? Is that just like another one of those lineage
things? It doesn't say anything else about him taking up the sword against anyone, but I just thought it was interesting.
Let me just read the verse. It's 1 Kings 19:17.
Okay.
Then Jehu will put to death whoever escaped. Oh, no, I'm sorry. All right, verse 15. Then the Lord said to him, go, talking to Elijah, go and return by the way you came to the wilderness of Damascus. When you arrive, you are to anoint Hazael, king of Aram. You are to anoint Jehu, son of Nimshi, as king over Israel, and Elisha, son of Shaphat, from Abel-Meholah, as the prophet in your place. Then Jehu will put to death whoever escapes the sword of Hazael, and Elisha will put to death whoever escapes the sword of Jehu. But I will leave 7,000 in Israel, every knee that has not bowed to Baal, and every mouth that has not kissed him.
So that means they're basically on a mission to wipe out anyone that's worshipped Baal? In this context? Is that what that says?
It's definitely the context of trying to turn people's hearts back to the one true God.
Wow.
I guess Hazael and Jehu must have done their job because there's nothing about Elisha and his sword thereafter.
Perhaps Elisha's ministry was a spiritual warfare.
Maybe so.
Oh, my word. Well, I thought that maybe one of my favorite parts of the message and the collective gasp that could be heard on the stream when Ken was like, you know, Jesus was a rich kid. And people were like, yeah,
people did not believe me.
Like, what? Because he's like, you know, Elijah, man, he was on that 12th set of oxen, which means 24. And so, you know, maybe that was his, the rest were his parents, but, you know, he definitely had people doing things for him. But Jesus as a rich kid. Then immediately I'm like, where is Ken going with Jesus as a rich kid? Because it was definitely, and I think everybody else was too. But when you're making the idea that you said that his life and Jesus' life has a lot of
parallels.
A lot of parallels that were in there. Do those parallels go past the miracles? Because you kind of gently touched on it, but I think you're saving that maybe for another message. But is there more than just the miracles and in those parallels that you're talking about? Because I'm really curious about, because I don't know that much about
Elijah. Sure, let's go ahead. And I gave the one for free. Let me give a second one because you're a podcast listener and you get another one for free.
Yay.
So we talked, you started this off by talking about me saying that Jesus was a rich kid, just like Elisha, because when Elisha's called, he leaves a life of comfort, really, and financial comfort for sure. And while Jesus was born to parents of humble circumstances, he left heaven where he was the king of the universe, where his father is God of everything. And so Jesus was a rich kid. He chose to leave comfort and adoration in heaven and come to earth. And so there's that parallel that's there. But let's go ahead and use the end of Elijah's, the story that I told at the very beginning of the story, as the kind of final thing. Whose death brings life to sinners, according to Christianity? Christ.
Christ, yeah.
And so when Jesus said, if I be lifted up, referring to his death, if I be lifted up, I will draw all to me. And so by looking, Jesus actually referencing the miracle that takes place in the wilderness when venomous snakes come out and bite the Israelite people. Moses fashions a bronze serpent that they look at, and if they look at it, then they don't die from the serpent bites. Jesus referencing that. And so people touch Elisha's bones after he's died and they come back to life. People look to Christ after his death and they come back to spiritual life. They come back to life. And so that's another parallel. There are the miracles. There's Elisha feeds people. He makes food multiply. He brings dead back to life.
It's been a while since I've read about Elijah, apparently.
Elisha, yeah.
Or Elisha.
Yeah. And so, there's those. And I think that one of the things that you notice is that Elijah is kind of a pretty intense, no-nonsense. When you look at his life in John the Baptist, they make a lot of sense because John the Baptist is constantly kind of calling people out, you brood of vipers, this, that, and other, and he's who warned you to flee and repent. So it's this message of repentance. And Christ's message is this message of the kingdom of heaven is at hand. Come and be a part of it. And you kind of see the same thing in Elisha's messaging, that Elisha is a lot less how do you say it? He's definitely a prophet that's asking people to follow God, but it's a lot less intense. I don't know if that's the right word, or violent than Elijah's. There's a kind of more of a softness to Elisha than there is to Elijah, in the same way that I would say that it feels like there's a little bit more of softness to Christ and his messaging than John the Baptist, which is an interesting thing because I think it gives a little bit of permission for God to use all kinds of different types of people to reach out to all kinds of different types of people. And I think that sometimes those of us who have a little bit more of a soft approach tend to be a little bit harder on those who have a little bit more of a harsh approach. And those who have a harsh approach often are very hard on people who are like soft pedaling the gospel or whatever. And so I think that there's room for both,
yeah,
in a sense. And that's the interesting thing about those when you start comparing those ministries. But I just, again, Elisha is just such a interesting character. And I know somebody out there is thinking, okay, you're saying he's not that harsh, but I remember the story about the bears. You remember the story about the bears, Randy?
I do not remember the story of the bears.
So
go
shortly
up into heaven, thou bald head.
Yeah. So shortly,
I remember now.
So shortly after Elijah goes is taken in a chariot of fire back to heaven, Elisha crosses the Jordan, does the miracle that you talked about, hits the water and says, where is the God of Elijah? And the waters part, and he crosses over on dry land. He comes to the other side. There's a school of prophets there. They're like, hey, where did Elijah go? Even though they told him that God was before, they're like, hey, let's go look for him. And Elisha's like, I wouldn't do that. And they're like, no, seriously, let's go look for him. He's like, yeah, I don't think there's any point in that. And he's like, no, but seriously. He goes, okay, fine, go look for him. They come back after a couple of days and they're like, hey, he's not out there. And he said, didn't I tell you? And so then he, right after that, it's recorded he's going somewhere and a bunch of young people come out and start taunting him. They say, basically what they're saying to him is, why don't you go up to heaven like your master did, you baldy you? And so they're making fun of him for being bald. And they're also kind of making fun of him. It's like, well, if you are so great, if you're a prophet, why don't you go up at the same time that your master or Elijah did? Why are you still here?
It's almost like God doesn't like
you. God doesn't like you that much, does he? Well, unlike Jesus on the cross, who says, Father, forgive them, Elisha, curses them. And the Bible records that two bears come out of the woods and maul, over 40 of these young people. And I was having a really interesting conversation. I was going to name the person, but let's just say somebody's very biblically smart, one of our biblical scholars in this church. And they had an interesting theory that they share. They asked me if I was going to be talking about this next week. And I said, probably not next week, maybe the week after. They said, well, here's their theory on it. They said, they think that Elisha it was early in his prophetic career and he was still trying to model himself after Elijah. And so he basically does what he thinks Elijah would have done.
Okay.
And they feel like that after that, you do not see him do anything like that after this. And they said that they felt like in this incident, Elisha realized how powerful the words were that he was speaking on behalf of God and the impact that they could have. And he dialed it back after that because of again, being kind of a more gentle spirit than Elijah. But he was trying to be like Elijah. And when it went the way that it went, and that's, I thought that was an interesting theory. I have to think about it some more. And my theory is slightly different on it than that, but.
It is interesting though.
Yeah.
I mean, you could see how someone might feel a little, ooh, didn't need the bears. I mean, just trying to make a point. Didn't need, you know, two bears to come out and maul people and then feel really bad about how you treated them probably.
It's an interesting story. It's one of those, it's the parts of the Bible that are uncomfortable when you read, reading from our cultural context and where we're at today. When we read those verses, they feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And we're like, well, wait a minute, that doesn't seem like the nice thing to do or the loving thing to do.
All right. So Luke 9, let me say goodbye to my family, not fit for the kingdom of God. But in 1 Kings 19, he makes a plow into a bonfire, slaughters the oxen, cooks up a block party barbecue, burns the backup plan.
Barn party.
Yeah. So why, what was the difference in the not fit for the kingdom? And then you brought the story of the rich young ruler, which I listened to it twice, and I think it just like went over my head.
Okay.
Like putting that together.
What was the point I was trying to make?
Yeah.
So remember that you remember the rich young ruler who comes to Jesus and say, what do I have to do to be saved? And Jesus says, well, you know the law.
Tell everything.
Lord, guard with your whole heart.
Yeah.
Or he says, I think he actually says, don't steal, don't covet, don't, you know, X, Y, and Z. And this guy says, yeah, I know that. I've done that. I've done that my entire life. And so I think he was kind of expecting Jesus to give him a little gold star and say, congratulations, you're in. And Jesus says, well, actually, just one more little thing. I need you to sell everything that you have, give it to the poor. And then once you've done that, come follow me. And the Bible says that this rich young man walks away sad. And Jesus looks at this young man and says to his disciples, man, it's sure hard for rich people to get into the kingdom of heaven. And the disciples say, well, if it's hard for rich people to get in, how does anybody get in? And Jesus says, well, with human beings, there may be some things that are impossible. With God, all things are possible. And the point that I'm trying to make on Sabbath that maybe didn't come together if it flew right over your head was that Elisha was a rich young ruler. He was very wealthy. He probably had some sort of influence in the community that he lived in, given that they're wealthy. And when God comes to him, a wealthy young man, and says, hey, I want you to sell everything that you have, and I want you to come follow me and be a servant to Elijah. Elisha does it. He doesn't go away sadly. He immediately cuts up the plow, makes a fire, slaughters the oxen, gives the oxen to the village, maybe some poor people there, to eat, and then he heads out with Elijah. And so the point is that I think that sometimes I think we feel a little uncomfortable with that story of the rich young ruler because we feel like, oh, so if you're rich, does that mean you wouldn't do it? Well, Elisha's an example of somebody who did.
Who did, yeah.
And who does do that. And so clearly not impossible to be wealthy and also be willing to give it up if that's what God's calling you to, because Elisha does do that. And I think it's just I think there's a lot of parallels that you see in the Gospels between Elisha's story. Some of them are a little bit more obvious, and some of them I think you have to think about a little bit to kind of get through.
So Elijah goes from being the rich kid to the assistant servant, if you want.
Body man.
Yeah. And you mentioned, you know, ever had that remedial job that just like, this is below me. Who wants to start? What was your job that you felt like, oh man?
Mushroom factory.
Oh, that's right.
I've said that before. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like the one that I remember the most.
My 8 days at Red Lobster.
8 days.
I think it was 8 days.
Okay.
Maybe 12. It was close. It was less than 2 weeks. I didn't have a full paycheck for 2 weeks.
Okay.
Yeah.
I worked at KFC when I was a teenager. Ooh. I was the only vegetarian in history. I think they worked at KFC, but they didn't have to worry about me eating any of the profits. So,
what did you? What was your job?
Did you eat the mashed potatoes?
I did. Yes.
Yeah.
I did a little of everything. The only thing I didn't do was actually do the chicken. But I did. I mean, I didn't fry the chicken, but I did pretty much everything else.
All right, Lucas.
I worked at cleaning maintenance in the dorm in La Sierra. When I went to school.
Yeah.
I was in charge of the maintenance.
In a boys' dorm?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. I was ahead of the maintenance or the cleaning crew.
Janitorial in a boys' dorm is not.
Yeah, it was not funny.
There are too many stories.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's disgusting. I'm sorry, my friend.
It's in the past.
Well, it was until right now.
It sounds like you're still healing a little bit over there. I don't know. You know, I'm not always a big fan of Ellen White, but I thought the quote that you gave, and this is just a small portion of it. And this was actually at the end of what Ken said, but I thought it was the most important part. And this would be like, this is one of those things that if you can put it on the mirror, put it in your car, sincerity and uprightness will not atone for a lack of kindness and courtesy. Wow. Like, you can do all the other things. You can be the best of everything, but, you know, it's kind of like the greatest of these from Jesus. But sincerity and uprightness will not atone for a lack of kindness and courtesy. Sounds, what was that pillar of salt woman? Or was that Sodom and Gomorrah? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Kind of sounds a little bit like that. So can't go on without just mentioning, man, I love that you use Jeff Cinquemani in the sermon as like the, you said the epitome of kindness and courage and the influence that he still has. You can see the fingerprint of his ministry everywhere you look around Whole Life. And it was just good to see the face in a picture and hear the name and remember. And then after that, you know.
And big thanks to Tammy for, called Tammy to make sure that was, you know, that it would be okay with her. And I just appreciate her allowing me to talk about Jeff.
I actually just visited with someone this morning who was talking about how impactful Jeff was on their life. Yeah.
You hear it all the time. And then you basically asked everyone, okay, life after, you know, when your life is over and you're gone, basically what's your legacy? What are you leaving behind? What are people going to remember you? And when seeing that picture of Jeff and just, you know, thinking about it, it's like, yeah, I think that'd be pretty okay to have so many people, like you said, just come up like, still talking about, still feeling the effects of, and still, you know, seeing that impact and how large it was.
Well, Randy, we know you'll live on in the 500 plus episodes of podcast episodes. So,
you know, it is when we first started, my first podcast was at Forest Lake Church. It was called the Cadell Cast. And we were like, what's our goal? And someone stood up and said, if I meet one person in heaven that comes to Jesus because this podcast was out in the audio world somewhere, someday it'd be worth it for me. And I was like, that's good enough reason to do it in the first place. So let's do it.
And away you've gone. How many podcast episodes do you think you've taped?
Well, we're almost at 500 here, where I've, you know, been involved in all but a handful, maybe less than five, I would say. Three or four, I think, just off the top of my head. I've produced probably another 100 episodes with other people and been guests and starter hosts for people that need a little help getting started. So I've kind of done a little bit of all of it. And then there were, unfortunately, not too many of the Cadell Cast. We lost our studio space after our second episode, and we never did go any further than that. So it was a really good show. I was excited, but that's just, you know, sometimes that's the way it goes. And then I've been a guest on a lot of Packers podcasts. People ask me to be on their show every so often, and so I enjoy that too, just talking some football. So, all right, Lucas, do we have any questions from this week?
Yes.
Oh.
So first one, Elijah was the only prophet taken directly to heaven in a chariot of fire, and he arguably has one of the worst attitudes of all of God's prophets. The next Elijah, John the Baptist, was beheaded. Why was Elijah taken to heaven? Is there some connection between Elijah's ministry and the chariot of fire escorting him to heaven, or was it just an arbitrary decision on God's part?
I will stick with the answer I gave at church. I have no idea. I don't know. Do you have a theory on that, Melanie? Because I genuinely don't.
I don't know either. But I do think it's interesting that it's a chariot of fire, because fire was prominent in a couple of different places. Like when the fire comes down and consumes a sacrifice. Yeah. Mm. And then later when... I can't remember what army it was, or
Elijah the one that sat on top of the hill and the captain came up and said,
yes.
Yeah.
And so then he calls down fire from heaven for that. And so I think it's interesting that his ministry, you know, fire coming down from God is either to accept a sacrifice or to pronounce judgment. And so that fire coming down to receive Elijah, I think, is just interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who knows? But it also, you know, when Elijah's in the cave and it says, you know, the wind and the fire, and God was not in the fire. So I don't know. I just think those are interesting.
Yeah. Tell us your theory on this, if you have one, because it's a good question. I actually have thought quite a bit about it. And it's strange, because Jesus actually says John the Baptist is the greatest prophet ever, which if Jesus said it, you know, that's it. But John the Baptist was beheaded. One of my favorite, in fact, I'd say it is my favorite quote from Ellen White out of Desire of Ages, is she talks about how, that heaven's greatest, I'm going to paraphrase it. Basically, heaven's greatest honor is to suffer with Christ. That Elijah, who went to heaven in a chariot of fire, wasn't greater than Elijah, than John the Baptist, who died alone in prison because a young lady danced really well. And what a comfort that really honestly is for those of us who are suffering. You know, we want the chariot of fire. We don't want the refining fire. Hmm. Or worse, you know. And so I do wonder why God chose Elijah. You know, there's only Enoch and Elijah that I think we're aware of by name that were translated to heaven without seeing death.
Without seeing, I was going to say Moses, but seeing death. Yeah. Sorry.
Maybe when God called Elijah, his response was, on one condition, when I'm done.
I am going to need a chariot of fire to get out of here at the end.
That's it. You know, I have to wonder, though, because it doesn't, I mean, maybe God and Elijah have a lot longer conversation than what's recorded, but there doesn't seem to be any indication of, okay, I want you to go anoint Elisha because this is what's coming for you.
What's coming, yeah.
I mean, it kind of seems like Elijah he just assumes maybe he's going to die. He's going to get his wish. He's going to die.
Well, maybe that's why he was grouchy then.
maybe, yeah. But, I don't know where I was going with that. I lost it. That's okay.
Sorry.
No, that's okay.
He probably drank black coffee.
Yeah.
You know, people that drink black coffee usually have a demeanor a little bit.
Maybe if I had had some black coffee, I would have remembered what I was going to say.
I don't know what that totally says about you, but, you know, there are some ideas.
I was going to say something about the fire. I was going to say that maybe the fire that he was taken up in was almost a purification, even.
Wow.
Maybe it represented a purification. Maybe it was the fire of judgment and the fire of accepting a sacrifice and a fire of purification, kind of, because fire can represent
that. Yeah, wow.
All those things.
But it's not the last time that we're going to see chariots of fire in this series.
Ooh.
Dun dun dun
dun dun dun dun dun.
Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah.
How many of you guys watched that movie in a gym somewhere at an Adventist event?
Can I say that this was my Schindler's List from Seinfeld? We had to watch it when I was in high school, and my girlfriend and I happened to be in a darker corner in the back, and we made out.
Oh dear!
Instead of watching.
So you don't know what happened during Chariots of Fire at all?
No, okay. Sorry.
That brings back the soundtrack. Brings back some happy memories, huh, Randy?
Yeah, it makes me smile.
Okay.
Okay. How do we know we have built a life worth living for others when we die?
How do we know if we've lived a life worth living when we die?
Yeah.
It's I hard because you're already dead.
Yeah. For me, and I think everybody has to figure out the answer for themselves on this, but for me, it really comes down to knowing that I am doing what God's asking me to do, that I am answering the call that God has put on my life. I think that it's really easy to say, well, you know, if you perform a bunch of miracles, if a lot of people remember you after you die, then you've lived this, you know, really wonderful life. But I really, for me, I believe for myself and for Christians, the ultimate answer to that is, have you listened to God's call in your life? Have you followed where you feel God leading? Have you done your best to love God with all your heart, mind, and soul, and to love your neighbor as yourself? And that's I think what genuinely matters.
I like that.
And we have one last here. Just wondering if Pastor Ken could comment on 2 Kings 2:23-24. When I was a kid, this short little snippet of the story always started to scare me. Is there some hidden meaning in the original Greek or something? Some unmentioned meaning?
We can always hope when we, if it's one that we...
So he says 2 Kings 2:23-24.
23 and 24.
I'm curious now.
Ah, that's the story we talked about earlier in the podcast about the boys coming out of the city and taunting Elisha, and the bears mauling 42 children. And so the question was, do I have any insight on that?
If there's some hidden meaning in the original Greek or something.
It would be original Hebrew, I think.
Yeah, that would be Hebrew.
Okay.
Yeah. So I would just refer you back to what I said earlier in the podcast, and that's probably the best I'm going to be able to do with that. It is one of the ones, like I said, I think it's interesting how different cultures accept different things in different ways. There's some cultures that would hear this story and they're like, yeah, of course, you taunted a prophet of God who's been set aside by God. Of course that happened to you. And it should have happened to you. And it was the right thing to happen to you. In our culture, for many of us, we say, well, wait a minute. They're just kids. And
they should have gotten a timeout.
They should have gotten a timeout. They should have something else.
They should have gotten at least a spanking, probably.
Well, Randy, Wisconsin.
Well, I was going to say something different, but I don't want anyone to think bad of me.
Strandy.
Srandy.
Srandy.
1983, Wisconsin.
It was a rough time.
So, you know, I think it's easy for us to be very judgmental in the place that we're at on this particular story. Mm. One of the things that I think is worth thinking about a little bit, though, is not because we're being afraid of being mauled by bears, but what does it mean to be respectful? What does it mean to be courteous and kind to the people who are in authority positions in our life? And I think that nobody's going to argue that those kids were being rude. By the way, my personal, before I heard the theory that I was given on Sabbath, which is interesting, I'm still mulling it over, the way I've explained this one to myself is that if God had let that slide, then Elisha's ministry might have ended right there on the spot because nobody would have respected him. They're like, oh, you know, a bunch of kids can taunt this guy and nothing happens. Mm-hmm. If in that time, that culture, then they're like, well, clearly this guy isn't, if he doesn't serve a very powerful God, if nothing happens when we taunt him, and not just kind of taunt him, this was very belittling and very beyond just basic rudeness in that time and that place. So that's what I have, and it may or may not be particularly satisfying depending on who you are.
Well, Sincerity and uprightness will not atone for lack of kindness and courtesy. Oh, I'm just saying.
There you go.
All right, guys. Upcoming this week. I don't know where you are right now, where you're listening from, but if
but you better get your tickets because
that's right. It's Barn Party. It's this Saturday, 4 to 9 p.m. Your tickets are free, by the way. And I got a text. I don't know who it's from because it comes into the text line.
Oh, I was referring to people who are in foreign countries and other states. I was saying they need to get their tickets to fly
here.
Here.
Yeah.
Train. Oh, yeah. So we're paying for tickets for people
for
to
Barn
fly
Party?
Here?
Well, I don't know. That's up to you.
Well, no. I mean, I don't think so.
Given the current state of things at the airports, maybe just hop in a car and drive.
Yeah. Well, you know, whatever you can do to get here. It is free. And I had somebody text me that they heard on 98.1, the Joy FM, which is all over Central Florida.
Thank you, 98.1.
That they heard our name on the air as for Barn Party. So I did submit to them over a month ago.
Thank you. Thank you so much for doing that.
So somebody, because even apparently if there's a certain number, they probably go through. But as it comes upon that date and then they have room on a whatever to mention what's upcoming, they'll read off of what's on the calendar. So it's been all over the place. But please, please, please come. And if you are a Whole Life member, it is up to us to feed the masses. So bring your chili and bring your cookies. We're going to provide hot dogs and chips and water, but we need your chili.
We need that. And we also really, 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 I cannot say this enough, really need volunteers.
Yep.
We have 90 volunteer positions that still need to be filled. So if you haven't volunteered for anything, if you please could do that, I'm sure in the show notes there'll be a place, or just go ahead and send an email to Carla@wholelife.church. Carla's handling all of our volunteers. She'd be more than happy to help you get paired up with something that, and really most of the volunteer stuff is not difficult. It's just, you know, standing by an event and making sure that the line.
And you're going to meet a ton of people if you volunteer.
And it's not for the full 5 hours.
No, it's just for 1 hour usually.
Mm. Oh, and that's Carla with a C.
Yes.
Yeah. Or wholelife.church/barnparty. The link is right there to sign up.
There we go.
You can do that too.
Perfect.
Yeah. All right. Also, just because I can, I will. Special needs parents support group. We meet in Ken's office the second Sunday of every month, which happens to be
this Sunday.
This Sunday. So it's either 3 or 3:30. It's either 3 or 3:30.
You don't want to do a 7 a.m. Support group right after a barn party?
My wife can. She's free to do whatever she wants. She's the leader of this. So if you have or you know someone who has a family member with special needs, just come and hang out. We met somebody for the first time last month, and man, they came with a lot of questions and needing resources, and our families were like, hey, well, what about this? Have you tried this? Here's a solution. And it was just like they left with a smile on their face. So that's kind of what it's about. And we just hang out and talk about life and get to know each other. So it's a good time. Also, this week, you're going to see, if you log on to wholelife.church/barnparty in the next 48 hours after you do this, later in the day on Wednesday, sometime in that time frame, you're going to see a new wholelife.church website. So if you see something you like, let us know. We'd love to hear your thoughts on it. And if you see something that's broken,
tell us.
No, exactly. Email randy@wholelife.church and we'll get it fixed. But I think
Exciting is that we're getting a new app, have definitely been needing. So this is really kind of cool, right, Randy? Because the website, the app, and our database are all all syncing together to, so this is kind of a cool thing that hasn't been the case in the past. And so the neat thing about this will be that it just allows a lot more functionality for us with what we're doing.
A lot more functionality. We're saving money. We're saving time from not having to log into 100 different places. And it's been a long time, but it takes time to get this. I mean, the list of things that we've had to do to get to this point is mind-boggling.
Huge kudos to you, Randy, and to Lucas for really making that the website happen. I want to also say a huge thank you to Karen and Freud.
Yep. Freud.
Who both really worked hard on this project. And I think that for me, the thing about these kind of projects that makes me feel a little bit sad is that they're so impactful, and yet most people don't really realize it. That they're like, oh, a new website. Okay.
That's cool.
It's like, nice.
I mean, I would be too.
But, well, no, you don't. But the But the whole experience being mm-hmm. tied together, there's just so many different aspects of things that are here that are just really a huge upgrade for us, and just super excited about this. So thank you guys so much for your hard work.
Well, and I think what you maybe, and if you're thinking to yourself, I remember our last app and it was really cool until it wasn't. And there's a whole reason why all that happened, which we won't go into, but our last app had nothing to do with our website. And that was a complaint that I heard on a regular basis. I used to handle the app, not the website. And it's like, well, I can find it on the website, but I can't find it in the app. I can't find it in the app, but I can find it on the website.
Yeah.
And the solution that we have come to in this new age is that this is tied together hand in hand. If you find it on one, you will find it on the other, because it is actually working in cohesion with each other. It's pretty cool. So you'll be able to find both. So everything from giving to you name it, we will find when we launch the new app and events, all the usual stuff.
That is probably something also worth saying, that if you have been doing online giving on our website, you'll be getting a little bit more information, a lot more information about this as things come up. But you will have to re-log in. I think you're going to have to create a new password
eventually
for the new website because of the new protocols and everything. So just kind of be prepared for that.
Yeah.
It may even mean you have to enter in, if you're like me and you put your info in, to just be able to hit a button every month and be like, yes, submit. You may have to re-enter that, and we apologize that that's what's happening. But if it makes you feel somewhat better, it's saving the church a lot of money.
Yep.
To do this. And the way that we're going about doing it is really a big cost savings for us. So that money that you're donating, we're actually making sure that that money is being used as efficiently as we possibly can. So thanks for the understanding when that comes up.
Yep.
And the good news is the giving platform that we're using, all the giving platforms that we're currently using will still work. They will still be working for the next several months.
Yep.
But we're just going to be encouraging you to make that switch over in the next couple months as we consolidate.
And you'll see messaging on the website. Yep. If you have any issues, it'll take you to Karen, likely, and she can help. We can help if it's a web issue thing. But basically, the savings and also just the man hours of what the way we used to do things versus how we're going to be doing them in the future. Like, this is such a huge upgrade that it's hard to explain. So just know that it's saving all of those things, which is really, really good. And then finally, a couple of you have joined the Slack channel through the link in – a couple others said, link's not working for me.
Nice job, Slackers.
That's right. I redid it. And so I'm hoping it's going to work. But if not, as always, podcast@wholelife.church. Just send me an email from the email that you want to be in subscribed to from. Or you can just type it in the email if you like only have access. You're at work and you think about it. It's like, I don't want it to come to my work email. But just tell me which email you'd like it to, and I will send it, and you'll be in within moments. And then you can join the Slack channel. Lots of cool other little tidbits that we post there. Melanie, the author, drawings that get left in the studio by the youth when they come and hang out for an evening of fun. So all kinds of cool things. Dreams about Australia and episode 500. So many things. So definitely join the Slack channel. Lots of extra little extras there for you. Barn Party, volunteer, please. It's the best event of the year here on campus, and we'd love, if nothing else, to see you for the first time. Come and say hello. That's easy for me to say, goodness gracious. Shake a hand and meet, put a face with a name. It'd be wonderful. Anything else, Lucas?
That's it.
Melanie?
That's it.
Ken?
That's it.
All right, guys. Thanks for listening. Have a great week.
Thanks so much, Randy.